again.
Okay, well, thank you. I appreciate the breadth of expertise and knowledge among our commissioners.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Keough. Thank you, Commissioner Thorburn and Commissioner Linville. We are now meeting minute approval, and we have the July 30, August 1 meeting and the August 21 meeting. Would anyone like to comment or make a motion?
I'll make the motions. I'll do them as two separate minutes.
Yes, please.
So I move to approve the July 31st, August 1st, 2020 Washington Fish and Wildlife Commission meeting minutes as written.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I will second.
Commissioner Anderson, second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed, same sign. Commissioner Thorburn.
I move to approve the August 21st, 2020 Washington Fish and Wildlife Commission meeting with one noted slight correction, and that's the spelling of Hannah Anderson's name.
Well, with that, I'll second.
We have a motion and a second by Commissioners Thorburn and Commissioner Anderson. Does there a comment?
This is Commissioner Smith. I abstain. I was not at that meeting.
Very good. Okay, motion a second. Call all those in favor of the motion say aye.
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 Opposed, same side. Motion carries. Thank you very much, Commissioner Thorburn. Okay, we are down to agenda item 2, open public input. Public testimony is accepted only during those agenda items designated for public input and during open public input portions of the agenda. For items not on the agenda, be aware the testimony may be taken out of order. Speakers will be allowed 3 minutes to speak. A timer will indicate that your time is up. Please wrap up your comments as quickly as possible. How many do we have now, Nikki?
Currently we have 4. So if you're on the computer, the raise hand button appears under your name. If you're on the phone, please press *9 and wait to hear you have been unmuted. Okay, so now we're at, 15.
Okay, so I don't know that we can take any more than 20 with our time constraints. So Nikki, go ahead and call the first one, please.
Okay, we've got number 1550. Please state your name for the record. Make sure to unmute yourself.
Okay, Diggy, let's go to the next one. We'll come back to that one.
Okay. Let's see. Go ahead, Heath.
All right. Good morning, Chair Carpenter, rest of the commissioners. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, thank you. Well, good morning. It's a somber day today. Just a couple things. I remember 19 years ago today being in Washington, D.C. on 9/11. So always a reminder of that. And then, of course, we've got fires burning across the West Coast. And I have many friends and colleagues in Oregon who are threatened. So certainly know it's a weighty time right now. I did want to just call in and ahead of your decision this afternoon. Much has been said about the Columbia River policy. I expect, not much is going to be said now that's going to change things. I did just want to follow up on a couple of the things that were said at last week's forum. One of that being, this idea that there's not much opposition or concern that's been expressed to the policy. I don't think that's the case. You're well aware of the 100-plus groups and obviously legislators that have sent letters. as well as just from groups that I'll read, Trout Unlimited, Wild Salmon Center, Wild Steelhead Coalition, Wild Fish Conservancy, and the Conservation Angler have all sent in letters. So I just thought that was important to make sure that was on the record. As it relates to conservation and the conservation impacts of the policy, I think, you know, I and others have spoke numerous times about the concerns there, so much so that Commissioner McIsaac would say, well, besides X, Y, and Z, what conservation concerns are there? I watched Bill Twite's comments in response to the summer Chinook question, and I think that was very telling in terms of, you know, this will have a negative impact on, you know, the conservation of summer Chinook, and particularly if, you know, the recreational fishery doesn't continue as a marked selective fishery. So finally, you know, looking forward, I would have really loved to have seen more of a, you know, a setting goals on this. If our goal is to optimize or, you know, really enhance the economics of the overall commercial, or sorry, the overall fishing industry in the state, much more could have been done there to figure out how that was best accomplished, and that really we did not spend a lot of time throughout this process doing that. Finally, if PHAS is a major concern, particularly in the lower river, then how are we shaping fisheries, gears, you know, those types of management decisions to address that. So with that, I will leave you with that, and thank you for the time.
Any questions of Mr. Heikkilä? Thank you, Mr. Heikkilä, for your comments. Nikki, next, please.
Okay, next we have Sophia Ressler. Go ahead, Sophia.
Good morning, Chairman Carpenter and commissioners. As you all are very well aware, my name is Sophia Ressler. I'm an attorney with the Center for Biological Diversity. I'm here today to talk about a different type of carnivore than I usually comment on, our endangered southern resident killer whales. I've had the opportunity to witness and engage in the process to license commercial whale watching vessels in Washington in order to protect the endangered orcas. The commission will receive a briefing on this tomorrow. The department is currently writing a rule on this program that the legislature required, and the science panel that helped advise this process has recommended using the precautionary principle and enacting rules, and the economic analysis that was done actually shows that in Canada, when the Whale Watching Association agreed to not watch the southern residents, business increased. However, the industry representatives on the advisory group refused to voluntarily stop watching the southern residents until their population increases, while at the same time admitting that watching the SRKWs makes up a very small percentage of their business. Instead, they refer to a sentinel role that is not evidenced by science. I also had the amazing opportunity to spend much of my childhood and young adulthood up in the islands, watching with my own two eyes as the whale watching fleet increased by 68%. For all of the anecdotal information on the sentinel role that whale watching vessels play, I could get you just as many people that would tell you that whale watching boats attract other boats and increase noise and disturbance around the whales exponentially. This situation is dire. These whales will not make it unless we do everything in our power to help them. Certainly, that means making sure they have more fish to eat and less toxic waters to call home. But the most imminent thing we have the power to do is decrease vessel disturbance and noise and at least give the whales a better chance to find the fish that are out there. This is why the rules that you will vote on eventually creating the licensing program should require there be no watching of the southern residents until their population can meaningfully rebound. I'd love to have further conversations with any of you on this subject prior to the vote, and I thank you for listening to my testimony.
Any questions from the commission for Sophia? Thank you for your comments, Sophia. Appreciate it. Nikki, next.
Next, we've got David Lynn. Go ahead, David.
Greetings, commissioners. My name is David Lynn from Ocean Shores, representing myself in support of wildlife and wild places. On August 19th, the department staff held a conference call to discuss the Lead Point Wolf Pack. It was a perfect metaphor for the department's mentality. The staff spoke and the public was muted. We heard the rationale for killing wolves and each member fell into line. Once again, the department used the deeply flawed wolf-livestock interaction protocol to justify killing more wolves. Once again, the department reacted with a kill order as soon as it hit one of the magic numbers in the protocol. So much for flexibility. On June 26th, you, the commissioners, considered a petition for a rulemaking proposal, and you summarily rejected it. You were presented with the department's cursory review of the petition, and the staff had a predetermined outcome for their recommendation and simply filled in some superficially plausible arguments to get there. But you did not hear from the public about their thoughts on the petition. Had you done so, you would have heard a much different analysis. When do the citizens of this state get their voices heard? They get their voices heard when the governor hears them. Thankfully, our multitude of calls and letters resonated with Governor Inslee, and he stepped in to correct your rejection of the petition. Clearly, the department is on the wrong path and needs to seriously consider how to prevent conflict rather than just react to it. The current strategy is simply unacceptable. The department failed to respond to the governor's letter from last year and is imperative that it take a new approach. During that June 26th meeting, one of your numbers stated that there are many people who feel they're not being heard, and I'm one of those. I have presented my thoughts during the public comment period at numerous commissioners' meetings over the past 3 years, and I always come away feeling that this is just a pro forma exercise and that I have not been heard or taken seriously. I'm appalled and I'm angered at the decision to kill wolves in the Togo Pack, the Wedge Pack, and the Lead Point Pack this year. When will the department come up with an effective policy that actually recognizes the problem and finds its solution? Right now, it seems to have only one deadly solution. The so-called incremental killing practice is nothing more than the gradual extermination of the entire pack, for example, the Wedge Pack. Incremental killing is a persistent delusion by the department that does not reduce conflict, it only increases it. Is that the real plan? How much longer do we have to listen to excuses rather than solutions? As for me, my voice only gets heard in these matters through certain environmental organizations who bring litigation against the department to try to stop some of its worst excesses. They provide the only avenue for ordinary citizens to be heard over those of commercial interests that currently drive the department policy. Thank you for your time.
Any questions of Mr. Lynn? Seeing none, thank you for your comments, Mr. Lynn. Nikki, next, please.
We're going to try caller 1550 again. Go ahead, caller. Make sure to unmute yourself. Oh, okay, we'll move on from that. Next, you've got Harriet Allen, followed by Carrie Wallingford. Go ahead, Harriet.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Harriet Allen. I was a WDFW biologist, research scientist, and manager for 32 years. I want to support you in voting to adopt the two proposed rule amendments on hunting contests that will be presented later this morning. These killing contests encourage and reward killing large numbers of wildlife, demonstrating a disrespect for and a devaluing of wildlife. It hurts the image of hunting, principles of respect for wildlife, and the department's stewardship role in managing the state's wildlife. The proposed amendments do not in any way restrict the ability to lawfully hunt unclassified and classified animals that don't have a bag limit. What the amendments do restrict is making a game or contest of killing these animals in the department's name and under the department's authority. They're still allowed to be lawfully hunted. As a retired WDFW employee who strongly supports the department's mission, I'm encouraged to see the proposed rule changes that have been brought forward. Killing contests permitted by the department do not have a place in modern hunting, and I urge you to vote to adopt the two proposed rule amendments. Thank you.
Any questions of Harriet? Harriet, thank you for your comments. Nikki, next.
Next, we've got Carrie Wallingford, followed by Greg Johnson. Go ahead, Carrie.
Hey, Nikki, this is actually Nello Pasinich.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, I'm probably registered under my office manager's name. Hey, I'm just Chair Carpenter and Commissioners, thanks for the opportunity to chat this morning. I didn't get on quite at the very beginning, but if you took a moment of silence for 9/11 today, that is that is much appreciated. It is a eerie day down here on the Columbia River as well, with all the smoke that, that is here from all the fires burning around. But I was also going to be addressing the upcoming discussion on the Columbia River, and I just would urge this commission to not adopt the proposed policy changes on the Columbia River as proposed by the Columbia River Work Group. You know, earlier we heard the positive news about coho jacks, and I thought that was, it's a great sign. But what was left off that earlier comment is that the size of our returning adult fish have been trending smaller and smaller. Certainly a 16-inch fish is going to make it through a 9-inch mesh gill net, which is probably part of the reason why there are so many. But with the proposed continued use of gill nets, you know, hopefully one day we aren't left with only, you know, 16 to 20-inch fish. But again, you know, referring to the earlier comments, I also agree that the recent dialogue with the Oregon commissioners is a positive signal. And I would encourage the Washington Commission today to temporarily adopt those Oregon rules and then work with them on the next steps needed to eliminate gill nets from the main stem and prioritize recreational fishing, and then where appropriate, fish with selective commercial gear. So again, thank you for the time to speak.
Any questions of Nello? Nello, thank you for your comments. Nikki, next.
Next, we've got Greg Johnson, followed by Brian McLaughlin. Go ahead, Greg.
Can you hear me there?
We can.
Okay, thank you. First of all, it's been a long 8-year process, and especially I want to thank all you commissioners, especially you guys that have been around for a long time. You know, Larry served on the original group, the Kitzhaber Plan. Maybe one note of, there's been a lot of discussion of a return to year-round gill netting. So I kind of looked that up, and in the springtime during the 70-30 sharing going on, we averaged 6 spring Chinook fishing periods. And then in the summertime, we averaged 3 Chinook or directed periods. So a total of 9 over like a 27-28 week period. Important to note under this policy and the effects of the prior policy is that in the spring Chinook, during those years, most of the allocation within the commercial fishery was shared in the main stem. Now with the advent of the select area and their needs for impacts to prosecute those fisheries in the spring, 2/3 of those impacts will be held in that area. So I guess what I'm really saying is those 6 periods won't be 6. 3 or 4 at the maximum. And then as it relates to the draft itself, I see a few positives in it in terms of the language that's put forth in the alt gear section. I see that as constructive. I see that as a tool that Mr. Twite and the department can use to further the development and the look at developing this gear. In terms of the buyback portion, that's already ongoing. We've been doing a lot of work on that. And assuming this policy is adopted, it'll be essential to use that buyback provision and to push that forward, because the fishery is significantly reduced and we'll need to create viability in it. We're gonna have to take some numbers out of these, have less fishers. Basically, this policy provides us with a platform to move forward, and that continues with the development of alternative gears. It'll be essential to create economic value because there's stocks out there we can't get after right now. Having said that, thank you all very much, and thanks for your effort.
Any questions of Mr. Johnson? Greg, thank you for your comments. Commissioner Thorburn, you have a question?
Yes. I guess I'll make it a comment. I should have asked it when Nello was testifying, but Greg Johnson brought up the proportion of impacts as they're divided between the recreational fishery and the commercial fishery. And Nello said that he hopes that we'll return to prioritizing the recreational fishery. But if 70% of the impacts are going on average with the proposed revisions to the policy, If 70% are going to the recreational fishers and 30% to the commercial fishers, and a lot of those come out of the select area, that seems to me that we're prioritizing the recreational fishery. So as I said, I'm making a comment since I wasn't able to question Nello on.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner Thorburn. Nikki, next, please.
Next, we've got Brian McLaughlin, followed by number 3935. Go ahead, Brian.
Can you hear me?
We can.
Thank you. My name is Brian McLaughlin. I reside in Portland, Oregon. My testimony concerns the Columbia River fisheries policy that you will consider later today. And my testimony is addressed specifically to Commissioners Thorburn and Linville. I've testified before in opposition to the Columbia River Workgroup's proposed policy, so today I just want to add 2 points. First, in order to increase the allocation of spring Chinook to the private commercial sector, the proposed policy would cut the recreational fishery, including the recreational fishery in eastern Washington, by 12.5% on average run years and up to about 19% on large run years. And so, commissioners, if you vote in favor of this proposal, how are you going to explain this to your constituents in eastern Washington, that this is in their interest and in the public interest? And this isn't just a rhetorical question. I would really like to hear, probably later today, how you're going to address this on the public record. My second point is this. Commissioner Graybill is planning to offer an amendment. The amendment will increase the allocation of the spring Chinook to the Snake River sport fishery, but it do so by cutting a corresponding percentage to the below Bonneville sport fishery. This cut will be in addition to those I just mentioned. Cutting the lower river fishery to add to the Snake River fishery was considered and rejected by the CRW. As explained by Commissioner McIsaac, staff's analysis showed that transferring fish would significantly reduce overall angler trips, overall economic impacts, and overall angler catch. Moreover, this amendment offers no conservation benefits and will create even more difficulties for concurrent management and orderly fisheries with the state of Oregon. This all runs counter to the overarching purposes of the proposed policy. Voting for the Graybill Amendment would thus be the epitome, in my view, of not in my backyard politics. It would be essentially sending the message, it's okay to cut the sport fishery and give more fish to the commercial fishery, but don't touch our eastern Washington fish. You know, instead, take it all from the lower river. So I think this presents a conundrum for both of you. As tempting as the Graybill Amendment may be, if you truly believe that it is in the public interest to cut the sport fishery, which serves tens of thousands of anglers in both western and eastern Washington, and to give those fish to a handful of commercial fishers for private profit, then fundamental fairness dictates you ought to be willing to bear a fair share of the cuts in your own region, and accordingly to vote no on the Graybill Amendment. Anything else, in my view, would be rightly viewed as inequitable, unprincipled, and hypocritical. So I urge you both and the rest of the commission to reject both the Graybill Amendment and the CRW's ill-advised proposed policy. I thank you very much for your time and consideration, and I'd welcome your questions.
Any questions today for Brian? Hearing none, Brian, thank you for your comments. Nikki, next.
We've got number 3935, followed by Lyle Cabe. Go ahead, 3935, state your name for the record. Make sure to unmute yourself. There you go.
All right. Hey there. Hey, my name is Tyler Como. Geez, I think I've been testifying on this issue for 7.5 years now, which is just crazy, but appreciate the opportunity. I'd like to state my opposition to the CRW's proposed changes to C-3620. I stand with the over 100 businesses and organizations, along with nearly 40 state legislators in opposing these reckless proposals. Thank you again for allowing me to testify on this. I wanted to keep it short, but I don't want to speak for Nello, but that comment from Commissioner Thorburn, I'd like to just say, I mean, reducing from 80-20 on the spring allocation to 70-30. That doesn't really indicate a priority, a recreational priority for me, or a faith of recreational priority when you're reducing. But anyways, I appreciate it. Thanks for all your service. Everybody stay safe with all the fires out there. And thank you again. I appreciate it. Have a good day.
Any questions for Lyle from the commission? Hearing none, Lyle, thank you for your comments. Nikki, next, please.
Okay, next we've got Lyle Cabe, followed by Steve Cope. Go ahead, Lyle. Make sure to unmute yourself.
Okay, that worked better?
Much better.
Okay, thank you. Chair Carpenter and commissioners, first off, I'd like to thank Chair Carpenter and former Chair Smith for all our years of hard work on this Columbia River policy. I'd also like to thank Commissioner Graybill for his work on trying to save the policy on the work group. I'd like to address Commissioner Thornburn and Linville concerning their gillnet boat observation. And I haven't heard your comments specifically, but we related that you came away from that believing gillnets are selective. Well, 2 days ago, Barbara McClellan from Region 6 had to emergency close gillnetting in Willapa Bay because the gillnets were killing too many natural fish. So much for selectivity. Also, if the gillnets are selective, why are California, North Carolina, Alabama, Florida all banning gillnets? The fact is, gillnets are not selective and have no place in a mixed stock fishery on the Columbia River. I would urge a no vote on the proposal to increase gillnetting on the Columbia River. Thanks for your attention.
Questions from the commission? Lyle, thank you for your comments. Nikki, next.
Next, we've got Steve Cope, followed by number 3920. Go ahead, Steve.
Thank you, commissioners. I'm Steve Cope on behalf of Trout Unlimited. We appreciate the opportunity to comment on policy 3620. We represent over 4,000 members in Washington dedicated to conserving, protecting, and restoring cold water fisheries. With most wild fish stocks of salmon and steelhead within the Columbia Basin being listed for ESA protection, and in recent years experiencing some of the worst returns on record, with the exception of the Bonneville Jacks mentioned earlier, we strongly recommend you do not restore year-round non-tribal commercial gill netting in the mainstem Columbia River. Restoring gill nets to the Columbia is a step backwards for rebuilding depleted stocks of salmon and steelhead, and we believe inconsistent with the recovery plan goals for numerous ESA-listed salmonids. TU has a serious concern with the lack of studies about gill net release mortality impacts on bycatch, particularly the unknown impacts to wild summer steelhead. Both the summer and fall Chinook salmon fisheries, as recommended by WDFW, should be operated as mark selective fisheries. This lack of understanding is compounded by the lack of onboard vessel monitoring, and we believe leads to a severe underreporting of summer steelhead bycatch and mortality. Given the downward trends of ESA-listed salmonids within the Columbia, we think now is not the time to roll back efforts and prior commitments to mark selective commercial and recreational fisheries. Toward this goal, we recommend a transition from a non-selective gillnet fishery to a selective method currently being studied and employed on the Lower Columbia. Initial studies of these fish traps show a significant step forward from the currently assumed mortality rates of gillnets by achieving nearly 100% survival. We appreciate your consideration of these concerns and recommendations in your vote this afternoon. Thank you.
Any questions of Steve from the commission? Seeing none, Steve, thank you for your comments. Nikki, next.
Next, we've got number 3920, followed by Greg King. You're now unmuted. Please state your name for the record. Make sure to unmute yourself. Struggling with the phones things today. Yep, there we go.
Okay. Yes, it's Irene Martin with Kent here.
Wonderful.
Sorry, we had a little mechanical difficulty there. We're in beautiful Skamakaway, which sometimes has been translated as smoky waters, and right now it's certainly living up to that name. It's pretty dense here. I want to do kind of a two-part, very rapid testimony today on the strategic plan and policy 3620. I would like, first of all, to commend the staff, the commission members, and the director for the very well done second version of the strategic plan, which just came out. I haven't had time to read it in depth, but I have skimmed through the whole thing, and I am delighted with how well you put together all those comments and came up with a very coherent, fine document. I in particular want to point out the conservation principles on page 4, the attention to conflict resolution in there, the adaptive management concept that you're going to be operating with, and the commitment to living the agency principles, which I would translate as walking the talk. When we get to policy 3620, I kind of feel that this is almost like a pilot program or that was the test drive for the strategic plan. And I guess the question still arise with it is that we're looking at the commission trying to live up to the values expressed in the strategic plan. And they're a challenge. But you do have the science there that supports the reforms to policy 3620. And adaptive management, which is a feature of your plan, means change, and that's hard for everybody. And change doesn't come without conflict. When Kai Lee set forth the principles of adaptive management, he mentioned, and in fact insisted, that what would result from this would be conflict, and it would be difficult to work through. And we've certainly seen that. I am asking that you support the science and the adaptive management concept, as difficult as it has been, and pass the harvest reforms today. Thanks very much. And Kent is here now.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm the other half of Martin and Martin, lifetime commercial fisherman from Skamakaway, Washington. From just about any vantage point, policy 3620 has been a pretty dismal failure. I was in attendance when the policy was approved by the WDFW commission a good many years ago now. The vote was prefaced by flowery speeches about both sport and commercial fishermen reaping vast benefits from this new era. The recreational fishery was supposed to grow by 22%. The commercial fishery was projected to gain income from expanded select areas. We just weren't smart enough to see that. Alternative, more select harvest technologies were to be developed to soak up the large hatchery surpluses, thereby reducing PHAS. Needless to say, none of this happened. I think that is why we're here today, to implement some of those course corrections that were provided for in 3620 under the rubric of adaptive management. The proposed reforms are a good first step in addressing that looming deadline in 2023 when more hatchery production cuts will be implemented if surpluses and PHAS isn't dealt with. Finally, we're not opposed to alternative technologies, but the seemingly endless observations of the gillnet fishery has shown that the inflamed rhetoric of kill nets and curtains of death is a self-serving mythology, nothing more than an outdoor fiction. Providing an alternative technology is a tall order in terms of reducing the numbers of dead impacts per hatchery harvest, and an incredibly expensive one in terms of economic realities. We have done our part, indeed, thus far, we've been doing it all along. The $1 million worth of alternative gear laying in warehouses in the Lower Columbia show, we put our money where our mouth is. We will do our part in the future, but I think you need to give us a platform to work from. Thank you.
Any questions of Martin and Martin from the commission? Hearing none, thank you, Kent and Irene. Nikki, next, please.
Next, we've got Greg King, followed by number 6774. Go ahead, Greg. Okay, Greg's using an older version of Zoom, so I'm going to promote him to panelist really quick so he can talk, and I'll promote him back down. Okay, Greg. Unmute yourself.
Nikki,
can you hear me, Nikki?
Yep, go ahead, Greg.
Okay. Good morning, Chair Carpenter, Commission, Director Suswin. My name is Greg King, President of Lower Columbia River Chapter Puget Sound Anglers. Puget Sound Anglers is the largest sports fishing organization in Washington State. I'm here to comment about C-3620 this morning. Like you guys have heard me say before, we don't have a gillnet problem. We have a lack of hatchery production problem. 107 million less fish are produced on the Columbia River since 1992. What we have is a policy, a working policy, and with adaptive management in it. And this is what adaptive management looks at like. It's a matrix abundance wording we're putting into the policy. Right now on Spring Chinook, we fish on a run of 55,000, which may I address that it is a sports priority. It's a 70-30 split. We're only fishing on 5,500 Spring Chinook. If we go up to 100,000, sports get more, commercials get more. Plus, as the abundance goes up, we can produce more hatchery fish. And I concur with Mr. Martin about the PHAS things. 2023, NOAA's gonna come in and they're gonna say, we need to cut hatchery production because we're not taking these fish off the spawning beds. The policy is working like it's supposed to be. It's just scary. It's just scary because of change, like Irene said. It's still a sports priority. No matter which way we look at it, it's still a sports priority. We need to move on and make these changes for the good. We did a comprehensive review. A year-long study, Bill Twight, Ryan Lothrop, and Cindy LaFleur did this study, and it showed the policy was a failure. It needed to be fixed, and that's what the alternative, the adaptive management part of it is about, is fixing a policy to make it work for all user groups. It's not anything when we get to the matrix abundance and we're at a 65-35, sports will be fishing on 200,000 fish. Spring Chinook. My goodness, isn't that a good thing? Who wouldn't want to fish on 200,000 fish as a sportsman instead of 55,000? But we have to get there through hatchery production. And that's my testimony today. I hope you guys have a nice day. And I want to say one thing. God bless Bob Blake and our first responders. Thank you.
Any questions of Greg King today? Seeing none, Greg, thank you for your comments. Next, Nikki.
Next, we've got 6774, followed by Chris Highland. Please state your name for the record. And make sure to unmute yourself. Okay, we'll come back. We'll come back to 6774. Go ahead, Chris.
Nikki, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Brian Love from Brush Prairie, Washington, and I wanted to give you some quick data about steelhead mortalities from our six gillnet fishing periods that we had here in August. Recently, we had six nights of 9-inch mesh gillnet fishing on the Columbia. That was 54 hours of fishing time. My little fishing program had 53 drifts, which equates to about 132 nautical river miles. And out of those river miles, we encountered zero steelhead mortalities. It's just something I thought you guys needed to know before your vote today. And also wanted to thank you, commissioners, on all the work that you've put in on this policy and the group members and the staff. I couldn't imagine what their workload has been the last few years. And also the condolences to the Lake family. I hope the agency can keep the Willapa Bay salmon enhancement moving forward for Bob's sake. That's it. Thank you.
Any questions of Brian? Commissioner McIsaac, you have your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question. Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Love. I wrote down your stats for those drifts. You didn't mention how many Chinook you caught. So zero steelhead to go along with how many Chinook and 53 drifts?
Or an estimate. Didn't add up on my fish.
If you have
add
pounds,
up on my fish. Yeah, I didn't add up on my fish tickets. We could do six.
If you just haven't asked.
I think an average of 45 a night would be an estimate. Some nights there were lower 20, some nights there was over 50. So run those numbers.
Okay, thank you.
You had mentioned no steelhead. Was there any other incidental bycatch involved in the fishery call?
Well, I wouldn't call sturgeon a bycatch because we were targeting sturgeon. Couple sturgeon, couple inches over the legal size, were caught and released. That's it.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Nikki, next.
No problem.
Next, we got Chris Highland, followed by 6593. Go ahead, Chris.
Good morning, Commissioners. Chris Highland from Walla Walla, Washington. I'm a member of the Columbia River Recreational Advisory Group for both that made up of Oregon and Washington Anglers and Guides. I wanted to call just again, I would oppose the changes that are proposed by the Columbia River Working Group that would increase the priority of commercial fishing at the expense of recreational fishing. I want to thank Commissioner Graybill for his yeoman work on all of this, but you know, I think he was consistently getting outvoted by the other members of the committee, you know, and I think Dave's doing what he can, and I really appreciate his hard work. I would also oppose, as has been mentioned earlier, the increase as part of the overall package, an increase to improve Snake River fisheries. If the rest of the reforms were included, I don't think that's appropriate. And in many scenarios, it would actually decrease fishing in the Snake River, as was pointed out by our previous commenter. However, I would like to go on and add that there is still a fundamental disproportionate allocation of harvest to below Bonneville for Columbia River recreational. And this has not been addressed. It needs to be addressed. Whereas you have approximately, 70 in our state, 67% of the anglers are getting over 80, almost 90% of the harvest of spring. And this needs to be addressed. Thank you for your time, Commissioners.
Any questions from the commission for Chris? Seeing Chris, thank you for your comments. Nikki, next, please.
Next is caller 5693, followed by Story Warren. Go ahead, caller, state your name for the record, and please remember to unmute yourself. There you go. Hello.
Hello. Do you hear me, Nikki?
We can hear you.
Okay, great. My name is Jim Wells. I'm calling you from Astoria. I am a lifetime commercial fisherman, and I'm representing Salmon for All today. Represents fishermen and processors on both sides of the river. We're asking your commission to vote yes on the revisions to Policy 3620. This is not a popularity contest. This is using adaptive management to try to get a fair share of the Columbia River fish out to the tax-paying consumer. And that's the job of the Columbia River gill netter, both tribal and non-tribal. And under the initial Kitzhopper plan, there was two ways to make up for loss of the main stem to the commercial industry. That was alternative gear is number one, and enhanced select areas was number two. On the alternative gear, we've looked at Sains, Troll, now the Trap, and has not worked out as a conservation tool. The Trap has not. If it had, it would have been passed by the TAC committee by now, and that hasn't happened because the too high of handle of non-targeted fish and too high of early's mortality rates. So that method is not TAC approved. And it is certainly not proven to be economically viable to the commercial fishery, quite the opposite. Enhanced select areas, I'll tell you, I fished there, it is not working out. I'll give you just a few quick numbers. I won't get too far into it, but I'll just tell you the selects are not working out. And in the spring, as recently as 2017, we had 17,500 spring salmon there. It steadily dropped down to where 19 we had 3,000, and this year in 2020 we had 4,000. And that's a six-month fishing season, longer than it ever was before. And in the fall, fall Chinook, as recently as 17, we had 12,000 in there, and it's been stepping down to 6,000. 19, it was 3,300. This year, we're only at 1,648 fall Chinook, and it's about over for the Chinook in there. And the problem in there is the bright component is dropping way down because our select area bright program's failing, and there's more tulies. And it takes about six tulies to make up for one bright in economics because they're only 50 to 60 cents a pound, where a bright is $3.50 to $4. Coho, we're off to a fair start on coho, but it's been dropping way down. This year, like I say, it's a fair start, but we'll see where it goes. We had 168,000 coho in there in 2014, which was off the charts. It was incredible. But it's been dropping down to where we had 12,000 in there in 2018 and 19,000 last year. So neither of those two things are working out. If you want to get a fair share of this fish to the consumer, you need to use adaptive management now and start making some changes. And we pledge that if you do that, Salmon for All will work with the Oregon Commission as hard as we can to try to get concurrent with you guys in Washington and make this thing work. Get it going in the right direction. So thank you very much for all your work. And I do appreciate the commissioners that went out gillnet fishing and got a good look at the fishery. And I hope you had a good experience. So thank you very much for the opportunity.
Any questions of Mr. Wells from the commission? Seeing none, thank you, Jim, for your comments. Nikki, next, please.
Next, we've got Story Warren, followed by Diane Galega. Sorry, Diane, I always say your last name wrong, but we know that you're next. Go ahead, Story.
Hello, members of the commission. I hope you're all staying safe with all of the fires and smoke around the region. My name is Story Warren. I grew up in Washington and am now a wildlife biology student at the University of Montana. This is my third time speaking to you about this issue, so I'll keep it very short. Adopting the rule changes to end wildlife killing contests will signal all Washingtonians that wildlife management and stewardship is a serious responsibility. Ending killing contests will set the example for future hunters, wildlife managers, and citizens that wildlife is a valued and shared resource. It's time to end wildlife killing contests in Washington. Thank you very much.
Any questions of Story?
Yeah, Larry.
Hearing none. Commissioner Smith, please.
I would be remiss if I didn't say hi, Story, and again, another well done job. proud to watch you grow up.
Thank you.
Story, thank you for your comments. Nikki, next.
Next, we've got Diane, followed by David Moskowitz. Go ahead, Diane. Make sure to unmute yourself. Okay, Diane, maybe we'll come back to you in just a minute. Go ahead, David.
Hello, this is David Moskowitz with Conservation Angler. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Thank you very much. Chair Carpenter, members of the commission, Director Schusswind, my name is David Moskowitz with the Conservation Angler. We're based in Edmonds, Washington, and I am located in our Portland office, Portland, Oregon. And I want to bring up an issue that is related to the Columbia River fishery policy, has been mentioned, but I want to talk about cold water refugia in the Columbia. October 2019, the EPA released a draft report documenting the importance of cold water refugia along the Columbia for safe passage for salmon and steelhead migrating up the Columbia to the Snake and Upper Columbia. That report, the research there, found an impact on survival for fish that were using the cold water refugia because the main stem Columbia was above 68 degrees or 20 degrees centigrade. And that's the water quality standard, the current standard. But these fish did not actually benefit from using this cold water refugia because of, in many places, angling pressure within the cold water refugia. EPA report identified 23 cold water refugia areas, identified 12 of those 23 as being especially critical. The report also states that given the trends, the current warming trends, and no action to protect the sources of these cold water refugia, and with degrading water temperatures in those source areas, as well as increasing temperatures in the Columbia River as a migratory corridor for wild salmon and steelhead will become quite lethal by 2040. That is a warning signal about that everything we're doing is at risk. All of the habitat work, all of the fishery conservation work, that is all at risk if we don't protect this migratory corridor. Now, the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife submitted very fine comments written by Dan Routing of the department staff to EPA. There were comments from Washington DNR, but no comments from the Department of Ecology, who, as we know, has authority over the water quality maintenance in Washington. It is essential that the state of Washington examine the fishery impacts of fish using these cold water refugia. It's essential for Washington to work with DOE to make sure that the sources of these cold waters are protected for the future. The cold water refugia issue should be a factor in the Columbia River fishery policy that you're considering adopting today. And it's not a strong enough element to it. It's one of the conservation planks that is missing in this policy. So the Conservation Angler urges the commission to ask staff to provide a briefing on the Columbia River, Columbia cold water refugia issue to the commission and what can be done to make sure fishery impacts do not degrade wild stocks and what the department can do in working with its sister agencies to protect these sources. We also believe that needs to be incorporated into a much stronger position within the fishery policy you're poised to adopt. And we would say that that policy is incomplete without this conservation plank.
Okay.
I really appreciate the, thank you. I'm finished and I really appreciate the opportunity, Chair Carpenter, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
We have two commissioners with their hands up. We had three, but Commissioner Keogh, you took yours down. Okay, Commissioner Thorburn first, and then Commissioner McIsaac have questions or comments.
Thank you for your testimony. I've had an opportunity to look at the draft report. In terms of recommendations, and you did allude to this, it was very strong on the need for habitat protection, especially in some of the feeder streams in these rivers in these cold water refugia. It while it brings up harvest, it did not seem to me that that was the major focus in terms of recommendations. There was a huge amount on the need for habitat restoration and protection. And I just somewhat disagree with your point that proposed revisions don't acknowledge this. There's a whole segment in the proposed revisions to the policy about the cold water refuges and the need to, as you say, get a briefing, have staff take a look at this and inform us on the interrelation with harvest and the cold refugia. So just wanted to acknowledge that I've had a chance to look at the report.
David, before you respond to that, we have two other commissioners with their hands up. Could we get their comment and then you could respond to the three of them?
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Okay. Commissioner McIsaac, and then it looks like Commissioner Grayville.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is pretty similar to Commissioner Thorburn's. You broke up a little bit, at least on my machine here, Mr. Moskowitz, but I thought I heard you say that the update to the plan, the new policy, or however you want to characterize it, does not have anything about cold water refugia in there. There is an entire section on thermal angling sanctuaries that recognizes that the cool water, warm water matter that you're talking about and does call for consideration of this with the state of Oregon in a joint manner. So did I hear you correctly that when you read it, you didn't see that spot or could you clarify, were you talking about doing something more in the tributaries or because it does have an entire section on the cold water refugia idea and a mechanism and a proposal to try to consider it in a pretty thorough manner with the state of Oregon.
Commissioner Graybill.
Thank you, Larry. And I agree with both Commissioner McIsaac and Thornburn that yes, in my letter to all commissioners, one of the things that I mentioned as a positive of the policy is the draft policy is that it does deal with this. And as both Jim and Tom mentioned, there is a whole section addressing cold water refuges. Also, in my letter, I mentioned the fact that I've served on the Upper Columbia Salmon Recovery Board, Citizens Advisory Committee, for 6 years. And a priority of both for recovery of spring salmon in steelhead, cold water refuges are areas that we seek out and try to expand. So it's something that we're doing work on at the tributary level on the Upper Columbia. But I also emphasize the fact that all of this work for habitat, cold water refugia, here at the tributary, you know, source of spawning may go for naught with the proposed increases of gill nets in the main stem Columbia.
Mr. Moskowitz, would you like to have further comment for the moment?
Yes, and I'll try to keep it brief, and I really appreciate it, Chair Carpenter. And Commissioners Thorburn and McIsaac and Graybill, I appreciate the comments and the pushback in a way. Perhaps put this in context with Washington's action compared to Oregon. I proposed closures, our organization has proposed closures of cold water refugia to fisheries to minimize the harvest impacts on fish trying to rest in these areas when the Columbia is warm. And I've submitted them through the North of Falcon process. And we've spoken to the commission. Oregon has taken action, as you're aware, temporarily on the Deschutes in 2018 and 2019. And then temporary rules addressing three areas, Eagle Creek, Herman Creek, and the Deschutes, areas that are obviously under Oregon's jurisdiction. And Washington staff have refused to take stronger action. And they have, it's been a, they don't feel that the, they don't feel that closures are necessary to protect these fish. And I think for steelhead, which are particularly use these areas, particularly, especially as soon as the temperature in the main stem hits 68.5 degrees Fahrenheit, the residency of the steelhead in a cold water refugia changes from days and weeks to weeks and months. And these fish are repeatedly caught. There's not been enough study about that impact, about the immediate mortality, perhaps subsequent mortality, or just herding, spawning success later on in those in the migration of those fish. Dan Rowding's analysis focused on looking at Asotin steelhead that have to migrate through these and use these areas, and he finds some impact to Washington steelhead, to their survivability. Fish are using those areas. So I appreciate the fact. I'm sorry, Chair Carpenter. I understand it is mentioned in the policy, but there hasn't been action. And coordinating with Oregon is sort of a slow walk towards what is becoming a critical issue for migration of wild fish in the Columbia. And I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to respond. Appreciate the questions. Thank you so much.
Well, hold on 1 minute. I think we've heard you, and I appreciate your comments. I think Commissioner Graybill has a wrap-up on this piece.
David, I did want to mention in terms of actions that one of the things that has been done that I brought forward, probably 3 years ago now, is the removal of night fishing in Drano Lake. This is a prime example of the type of cold water refuge you're speaking about. And we used to allow fishing 24 hours a day on these steelhead that were moving upstream at that time. And we closed it to night fishing to reduce the impact on these migrating steelhead. So you know, that's one action that we've taken as a commission. But we understand we need to do more. And I do agree that Oregon is out ahead of us on this, and they brought it to our attention. And, it might be a slow walk, but we're going to make progress on this issue, David. Thank you.
I really appreciate that, Commissioner Graybill, and really appreciate your efforts on that issue at Drano Lake. And thank you so very much for your conservation efforts.
David, thank you very much for your comments.
Thank you.
Nikki, next, please.
Okay, we're going to try Diane again. Diane, see, okay, great, you're unmuted, and go ahead.
Thanks, Nikki. Good morning, Chairman Carpenter, commissioners, and department staff. I'm Diane Gallegos, director of Wolf Haven International, located in Tenino, Washington. I want to thank the commission and the department staff for their work in addressing hunting contest rule changes and urge you to adopt the proposed language as written later this morning. For many years, I've listened to the commission lament the decline of those who choose to hunt in our state. You spent time and energy strategizing ways of attracting new generations who learn to appreciate and respect the outdoors through hunting, fishing, hiking, and bird watching. In my opinion, continuing to sanction killing contests does not further that goal. Change is always hard, but it's more important than ever to keep the department viewed as being a professional and relevant agency. Fish and wildlife management will only become more complex and costly, and broad public support will be critical. Thank you very much for all your hard work and for your time.
Any questions of Diane? Hearing none, Diane, thank you for your comments. Nikki, we're getting a bit behind. If the folks can hear me that are waiting to speak, if you could condense your discussions down to a couple minutes each, that would be much appreciated. I don't want to short anybody, but we do have a busy agenda, so in advance, thank you. Nikki, who's next?
Yeah, I have a stopping at Frank Cassidy, so we've got six left. So
okay, go ahead. Thank you.
Devin Twitty, followed by Stan Brogdon. Go ahead, Devin.
All right. You guys hear me?
We can hear you.
All right. Name's Devin Twitty. I got a background with USDA Wildlife Services doing animal damage control. And I want to talk about the contest. I live in a house with five kids, and that contest has really kind of brought around my kids and people we know to be able to go out and experience everybody together. You know, I know it gets limelight as this bad thing, but it really, a lot of the contests, they strictly focus on getting everybody together, everybody having a good time. I mean, there's people that don't harvest anything, and they just get out there and they see the camaraderie, just everybody getting along, being happy. I mean, congratulations, you know, you did good. It's not just about killing. A lot of it's about getting people into the sport that haven't seen it and seeing that sportsmen as a group. I mean, they enjoy being with each other in the wilderness. And it's not just about the killing. To me, you see the way the people interact, you know, people that never seen people from across the state meet each other. I've seen a lot of these guys go out afterwards that have never really hunted something and go to the other area where the people are, like whitetail versus mule deer. And it just kind of broadens people's within it. Like I said, it's hard for outside people that don't hunt and don't go to these things to think that, oh, it's just killing. But, I mean, really, I've seen so much of it, it's really not. It can be viewed that way, and it sucks because I've seen it kind of drug into that situation where somebody did something wrong, but I haven't seen anyone at these contests that condone those people's actions. So it could really hurt the whole population of getting more people out there. I know that situation. I have a hard time. I've brought in lots and lots of people that never thought they would hunt into these contests. They go out there, they sit with me on a stand for, you know, coyote hunting, say, and they see a coyote come running in, I don't shoot it, and it's just like just such a wild experience. Next thing you know, they're going out and getting their hunting permit stuff done, and they're hunting now. They're going out, you're hunting, elk hunting. They see the side of conservation of, you know, being able to control the predators and, you know, the ungulates, the elk, the deer, everything, making sure that's all balanced. So it's not just about going out and killing stuff. It can be pushed that way, but that's not the feeling that most of them want. So I appreciate being able to comment.
Devin, thank you very much. Any questions of Devin from the commission? Hearing none, again, thank you for your comments, Devin. Nikki, next, please.
Next, we got Stan Brogdon, followed by caller 1550. We're going to give them a try again. Go ahead, Stan. Make sure to unmute yourself. There you go.
How about me?
We can hear you.
Commissioners and Chair Carpenter, thank you for the chance to testify one last time before you vote on the Columbia River policy changes. I'm guessing your minds are already made up with the amount of time and effort that's been spent on this issue, and I don't blame you. So I won't go through a bunch of addressing the issues I have with the policy changes. I will spend just a second addressing some of the stuff we've heard from other testimony. It's you know, all the economic arguments made from the original plan that we've heard, you know, ignore the fact that the runs collapsed after the plan was implemented, which of course nobody knew was coming when the plan was written, and everyone on both sides of the issue suffered because of it. So, you know, I'm really sorry that the economic side of it didn't pan out for some people, but it didn't pan out in a lot of ways for both sides. That's not really a justification for what we're doing here. I'd also love at another time to hear an explanation of how using a gillnet changes PHAS. It doesn't matter whether a gillnet harvests 9 fish out of a 10,000 fish return or 9,000 fish out of a 10,000 fish return. PHAS, which is the percentage of hatchery fish on the spawning ground, stays exactly the same. Gillnets change PHAS exactly the same as a 17-pound steelhead swims through 9-inch mesh. It doesn't. Also an interesting double standard we've seen between evaluating gillnets and every other type of deer, and that it continues even during a commission meeting. If we're just going to take people's word for it when it comes to ESA impacts, the department could immediately save a ton of money by getting rid of all the fish checkers they employ all over the state at a significant cost by just putting an app on people's phone. So when it comes to 3620, we had botched selective deer studies. We had a lack of effort towards a license buyback program. The barbless hook implementation, which was pointed out in March of 2019, had no science behind it. was then rescinded and later reinstated. A two-year policy extension so staff could have more time to study selective gears, but then they didn't study selective gear. Continuing to ignore the significant superior economics the state and region get from recreationally caught fish. We've had the whole policy review process, then the PRC process that Oregon left. There are all the times we've heard from both staff and commissioners how critically important concurrency with Oregon is when it comes to managing the Columbia River. Here we are, and the proposal is to go non-concurrent. You're about to vote to significantly change a policy that your own staff has said wasn't significantly flawed, was just not well implemented. And in doing so, you will once again thumb your nose at a significant chunk of your customer base, the same people you already have a horrible PR issue with because of a long history of decisions made at their expense. The same people WDFW tries to figure out how to continually ask to pay more for receiving less. Voting in favor of this proposal will dig the department further into that very deep hole it has already dug. This department needs healthy fish and wildlife populations to survive into the future. And it also needs a healthy, trustful relationship with the hundreds of thousands of customers that it asked to fill the wildlife account. I'm asking you to start rebuilding that relationship today. Finally, I'm urging you to vote no. Commissioners, thank you for your continued service.
Any questions of Stan from the commission? Seeing none, Stan, thank you for your comments. Nikki, next, please.
Next, we're going to try caller 1550 again. Go ahead, make sure to unmute yourself, and please state your name for the record.
Hello. Hello, hello, do you hear me?
Hello, we can hear you.
Oh, thank you. I apologize for the delay. I've been mixed up between Star 9 and Star 6. But anyway, my name is Bryce Devine. I'm a commercial fisherman. And I'd like to make a comment on the policy piece 36-20. It's been promoted and sold as a conservation policy, yet the review shows no conservation benefits. The problem with that is sort of like a placebo. Everybody thinks it's going to be a – there is a benefit to it when there is actually not. It creates confusion and delay, and these are really a setback for conservation. We have important things that have to be addressed, and if we bank on policies that do not work, we're not going to make any progress. The commercial fishery is an important constituency for recovery. I mean, we depend on healthy salmon stocks to for our business, and therefore I would hope that you would go ahead with the reforms and continue work on addressing the real issues for salmon recovery. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Any questions from the commission? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Devine. Next, Nikki, please.
We've got Dan Paul followed by Jim Coleman. Go ahead, Dan. Make sure to unmute yourself.
Yep, can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Good morning, Chair Carpenter, members of the commission. My name is Dan Paul, and I'm the Washington State Director for the Humane Society of the United States. I'm here this morning to urge your support in passing these two measures to prohibit hunting contests. I want to thank the department and the commission for all your thoughtful development and consideration over this issue over the past several months, as well as a special thank you to Commissioner Baker for your leadership in bringing this matter forward. I've provided comment on hunting contests at several meetings now, but I would like just one more opportunity to reiterate that these measures simply prohibit the organizing and participating in contests of killing wildlife for prizes and bragging rights, does not prohibit hunting of unlisted species, does not prohibit hunting for predator control. However, the mass killing of wildlife buoyed by the chance of winning cash, a champion's belt buckle, or a new AR-15 simply flies in the face of the North American model of wildlife management and is wrong for the values of Washington State. Thank you all very much for your consideration, and I truly hope you become the seventh state to outlaw this practice later this morning.
Any questions of Dan from the commission? Seeing none, Dan, thank you for your comments. Nikki, next.
Next is Jim Coleman, followed by Frank Cassidy. Go ahead, Jim. Make sure to unmute yourself.
Yes, good morning. My name is Jim Coleman. I'm a Columbia River commercial advisor. Chair Carpenter, commissioners, thank you for the opportunity to speak this morning. And I'm hopefully be short here. I just wanted to make my testimony to ask you to please vote in favor of the Columbia River reforms. Everybody on the call here realizes it's been a long 8-year process, and this policy was recognized as a failure in 2012, and it's proven itself as that over the course of the last 8 years. And I commend Washington for moving forward to getting a fix for this policy. The commissioners McIsaac, Kehoe, and Graybill worked very, very hard over a 2-year period. I participated in a lot of those meetings, and I think the facts are on the table that this policy is broken, and we really look forward to a vote today. And I'm a little worried that there might not be a vote today. So hopefully we have a final decision today, and we can get one step up the ladder in concurrence with Oregon. And it's going to take you guys to make this happen. So thank you for the time to testify today. And I look forward to the vote today in favor of the Columbia River policies. Thank you.
Any questions of Mr. Coleman from the commission? Seeing none, Jim, thank you for your comments. Nikki?
Okay, I've got three left, but I did indicate we'd stop at Frank Cassidy since we're over. Go ahead, Frank. Make sure to unmute yourself.
This is Larry Cassidy, and of course, most of you know me. I spent 12 years sitting in the very seat that you now sit in. And I've watched all the testimony this morning. It's been fascinating to see that the questions and issues are not much different than when I was on the Fish and Wildlife Commission many years ago. I want to make my comments fairly brief because there you have seen a full explanation of both sides of this issue. To me, for you commissioners, the challenge is to look out for the resource. I think the fish and wildlife resource is your number one responsibility. And the present program that I've reviewed to put gill nets back into the lower Columbia does not meet that challenge of finding a way to preserve this resource. Let me give you an example. One of the healthier runs is the Fall Chinook Run. Yet at the same time Fall Chinook are going through the lower river, we have Idaho B-run steelhead, which are about the same size, and they are in desperate situation. Now, I grant you that's in another state, but it's still an important part of the Columbia River, Snake River system. And so I don't see any way that you can put gill nets back in currently. And the challenge for you as commissioners is to find a way, an acceptable way, to have the balance of both a commercial fishery and a recreational fishery without using what I consider indiscriminate forms of fishing, such as gill nets. The upper tribe in the upper Columbia River uses all seines and are very successful and have, as I understand it, 98% survival of released fish. There are some fishermen practicing seines in the lower river now. I think it's only one or two. The comments about the trap not working, I think on the Skamakawa, I may have the river wrong, actually aren't accurate. It was successful, and it was a vehicle for taking the challenge that I present to you today. How do you successfully take care of this resource? And that's my comments, really. It's a big challenge. I know how hard you work. I thank you for your service. I've sat where you are, and I have worked with the Martins and other people, and they're very fine people. But your challenge as a commissioner is to take care of the fish and wildlife resource. And I ask you to do that by rejecting introduction of gill nets back into the lower river. Thank you.
Any questions of Mr. Cassidy from the commission?
No questions, Mr. Chairman, but I just want to say to Mr. Cassidy, it's very good to hear your voice, sounds like you're doing well, and appreciate your input. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cassidy. Have a good day. Okay, Nikki, is that a wrap?
Yeah, we have two more, but we're way over time and they came on later. So,
well, does anyone have an objection to hearing these two? If we only got two left, I hate to shut them down. I know we're a little behind. Any objection from the commission?
No objection.
Okay, give them 2 minutes each, please.
Okay. Next is caller 1780, followed by Chris Hager. Go ahead, caller. Please state your name for the record and make sure to unmute yourself.
Am I unmuted?
Yes, you are.
Okay, thank you. This is Rob Sudar. I appreciate this. I did sign up yesterday, and I'm not used to calling by phone, and I had a little trouble figuring that out. But thank you for giving me this opportunity for extending the time just a little bit. I just think that we've looked over these issues a lot. We know that we have good data on our fishery. There is reams of data confirming that we can be selective when we need to be. We're selective in the spring. We don't fish non-selectively in the spring. We have a great record of never exceeding our allocation in any season. And there's no reason to not give us an opportunity to get some of our, some of our economics back, which have been devastated by this policy. The staff has shown that these changes will have little impact on recreational fishing. The policy did not create a lot of recreational fishing days. Staff has shown that. And they've also shown that these changes won't take a lot of days away. It won't cost a lot of angler trips. But it will certainly do a lot for our industry. This last season, I'm a small marketer. I bought about 200 fish from the six openings. Those converted to over 7,500 meals in the marketplace. That's a lot of people who benefited from just my little part of that fishery and who would certainly be in favor of a gillnet fishery in the Columbia being maintained for the future. And that goes in all seasons. There are a lot of people that don't even know that we're having these discussions, but who want local fish. And that's what this policy is really about, trying to, are these changes available? And so that's the message I want to send, that the data shows this isn't going to have a big impact on the recreational fishery. It'll have a significant benefit for our fishery and for the public that depends on our fishing. And so I think these are reasonable changes that are in these revisions, and I encourage you to vote in favor of the changes. Thank you.
Robert, thank you for your comments. Next, Nikki, and this will be the last one.
Okay, this is Chris Hager. Go ahead, Chris. Make sure to unmute yourself.
Hello, everybody. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Awesome. Commissioners, thank you so much for the extended time. I will be brief. As the executive director for the Association of Northwest Steelheaders, and on behalf of Northwest Steelheaders membership, including our Columbia River chapter in Southwest Washington, I urge the commission to reject both the Columbia River Work Group's proposed policy concerning non-treaty salmon fisheries and the proposed amendment that would transfer spring Chinook allocation away from the Lower River recreational fishery to the fishery in Washington section of the Snake River. The CRW's proposal would, one, significantly reduce public recreational fishery or fishing opportunity for spring and summer Chinook, both above and below Bonneville Dam, compared to the original bi-state Columbia River reform policy and current Oregon rules. Two, would transfer allocation of a public resource to private non-marked selective commercial fisheries that exploit public resources to private profit with little to no net public benefits. And three, allow for increased gill netting the main stem Columbia, thus abandoning a guiding principle of the bi-state package. For example, under the CRW's proposal, recreational fisheries for spring Chinook would be cut on average years by 12.5%, both above and below Bonneville Dam. Worse still, Commissioner Graybill's proposed amendment would compound these impacts to lower river recreational users by transferring additional allocation to upriver recreational fisheries